This is Bend and Not Break. Abandoned Vampire AU, written by Her Love Was a Joke and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated R. Contains the pairings Mike Carden, Tom Conrad, Alex Greenwald, John Walker Spencer Smith, Brendan Urie Ryan Ross, and Andy Butcher Murtek, Adam Siska. This story is part 8 of the Screaming Down the Starlit Sky universe. And for additional warnings, author's note, and content information, please check out the introductory post on our journey. He trashed his apartment, throwing books and dishes, upending the coffee table, and breaking the one framed photo that usually sat atop the television. Shards of glass littered the lush white carpet, reflecting the light from the lamp on the floor. It lay on its side, the bulb naked and too bright. Other debris from his tantrum threw shadows in the yellow light, some stretching across the fine pile of the carpet, others sliding up the wall. Once upon a time, the photographer in him, the artist, his grandmother used to say, would have taken great interest in the contrast of light and dark, in the aesthetics of the disaster. Now he stared with unseeing eyes, his mind working furiously to conjure up an image of the woman he'd abandoned. He dropped his head into his hands and clenched his eyes against the sting of tears. What had he expected, really? That he'd run away and everything would somehow work out? Tom didn't think he'd been that naive, but the fact remained that he'd done it anyway, even knowing the danger. He'd had her blessing, of course, but then she'd had no idea what he was leaving her with. "Oh, Tom," she said, a small smile on her face, her happiness shining in her eyes. "I'm so glad you're doing this. You have too much talent to let it go to waste. School will be good for you." School had little to do with it. It was far less important than getting away from the vampires that infested the city. But Tom hadn't pointed that out. No, that would only have emphasized the fact that he was about to turn tail like a coward, leave an old woman in the middle of a mess he himself couldn't deal with. It was amazing how the human mind could rationalize anything. Tom's own had done a marvelous job. It wasn't leaving Grandma Conrad in danger. Mike had no interest in her. In fact, he'd never even been to the house. Also, it wasn't like his grandmother ever went out after dark. She had night blindness. Her chances of running into a vampire were practically non-existent. Yeah. Not even he'd been so desperate as to actually believe that. But it was something to cling to as he'd hurriedly packed his bags and ran to the airport for a 4 p.m. flight. It took most of his savings, but his grandmother hadn't even questioned his reluctance to take the train, something he'd loved doing since he was a child. It didn't make economic sense, but the train just wasn't safe, not when the trip was nearly 10 hours long. There was so much hostile territory to cover. It would have been a waste of time to get halfway there, only to be dragged back by Mike or any other dandy. Tom didn't know much about the other vampires. Mike had been careful not to reveal too much. But he'd spent enough time around the young ones to overhear bits of conversation. Nowhere was safe, but there was one place that might be, if he was careful. That it had a university with an awesome photography program? One that had shown unsolicited interest in his work? Was incredible luck. It was also the best cover story Tom was likely to find. The college fund was a blessing that Tom would forever be grateful for. His grandmother had always been vague about the details, and Tom himself had never met the man who'd set it up. All he knew was that a friend of his father's had taken it upon himself to do what Richard Conrad had never managed. Give a damn. Tom knew that, had things been different, if his grandmother hadn't been a widowed pensioner trying to raise a young boy with a bottomless stomach and an expensive hobby, she never would have accepted the money. Evelyn Conrad was a proud woman, but she loved her only grandchild. She'd wanted the best for him. And look how he'd repaid her. Angrily, Tom got to his feet and began pacing the length of the living room. He had to stay rational. There was no proof that his grandmother had been murdered. The officer on the phone hadn't wanted to discuss specifics, had only said that she'd passed away at home. She'd been 84, after all. Maybe she died in her sleep, peacefully and painlessly. Tom made a face. No. That wasn't likely. Besides, even if the cop had been more forthcoming with information, it wasn't like Tom could trust him. The dandies owned the police. He wondered if it was the same in all cities. Glancing at the clock, Tom saw that he had 2 hours before his train was scheduled to depart. He'd wanted to leave immediately upon hearing the news, but while there was a red-eye flight he could have taken, the lack of funds in his bank account put an end to that plan. With no other choice, Tom had booked himself a one-way train ticket home. It was first class, double the price of a regular ticket. But the chances of making a return trip were slim. Mike would be on his doorstep come nightfall. Tom didn't know exactly how far he had to go for the connection between them to short-circuit. He'd been too terrified, too nervous and jumpy to notice it shutting down. But as best as Tom could figure it, the thread that linked them would never really go away. After all, he could still feel some of the effects of the vampire blood he'd been marked with. How many people had smiled at him when he got here? Called him charming when all he'd wanted was to make a good impression. He'd been desperate for it, almost shouting it inside his head. A different Tom Conrad might have thought it was fun, the one who'd willingly, eagerly accepted repeated markings, a show of good faith during an unusually long courtship. That Tom would have asked for stories, or begged to page through the books in the incredible dandy library, soaking up every scrap of information Mike was prepared to give him. He'd have wanted to be the best he could be, not only for his own benefit, but also for Mike's. Ironic how that need to please would eventually give him back his sense of self. As much as he wanted to, Tom couldn't lie. He'd known what Mike was. He'd even fallen a little in love with the notion of it. Eternal life and never-ending parties? A family so close that nothing could break them apart? Sleeping late next to a lover who cared for you, who would teach you everything you needed to know. All of it had been seductive. And Tom had wanted it so very badly. No, he hadn't been lied to or manipulated. All Mike had done, all he'd had to do, was take the edge off of some of Tom's worries. He hadn't been mind-fucked or coerced, and no matter how hard he wished he could hide behind that, the fact remained that Mike's influence had grown weaker with every marking, until finally Tom found himself immune. And they'd discovered that by accident, on his last night back home. It was a massacre. There was no other word for it. Screaming and pleading, and the sick sounds of people dying. Tom stood in the corner, watching with wide, scared eyes, doing his best to keep the attention off himself. His stomach churned, and he seriously thought he was going to puke all over the expensive carpet. These were human beings, begging for their lives. Tom could hear them crying, could hear the wet sound of air being drawn into their ruined throats. This was wrong. There were ways to comfort them. Tom had heard that much from some of the fledglings. This was cruelty for cruelty's sake. Tom. His name was said sharply, startling him from his horrified thoughts. When Mike reached for his hands, Tom realized they were fisted at his sides. He forced himself to open them, to let the vampire twine their fingers and tug him forward. Tom knew what was coming, and while it scared him, the thought of this new awareness being taken away, part of him wanted nothing more than to forget what he'd seen. "There is nothing to worry about," Mike said, stressing each word. Tom blinked. Nothing happened. Mike scowled and tried again. Tom had been so incredibly naive about everything, but he could recognize the danger he was in. He played along, took a front row seat, and became just as guilty of murder as everyone else. He'd rationalized it, of course. He hadn't been able to help. What use was there in everyone dying? Tom Conrad had a lot going for him, especially his well-developed sense of self-preservation. He was fighting it now. It was hard. He knew he couldn't dodge Mike for long, but could he keep the vampire out of his grandmother's house? Technically, it was Tom's now. He also knew he'd never be able to leave the city. So, did that count as taking up residence there? Of course, Mike could always burn the house down. Dandies seemed to like that. But Tom didn't think he'd do it. Not until he'd had a chance to ask his questions, to demand details of what Tom had done for the last 18 months, where he'd gone and how he'd gotten by. What should Tom say? He was a shitty liar, but would the truth cause problems? Schechter was a vampire, a dandy at that. But he'd still have been good to Tom, allowing him to hide from anyone associated with William Beckett, and by extension, Mike Carden. Tom doubted he'd ever know why the vampire allowed him to stay. Nothing beyond his vague non-answer. "Because you interest me." Were the stories he'd heard of bad blood and mysterious insults. He supposed there was a thrill in denying one of Beckett's followers, but Tom would never presume to say that to Schechter's face. He wouldn't enjoy being thought so common. With a sigh, Tom got to his feet and grabbed the small backpack he'd stuffed his clothes into. He hefted it onto his shoulder and took a moment to look around the apartment he'd lived in for the last year and a half. It was nice, really fucking nice. He'd avoided sending his grandmother pictures, no matter how often she'd asked to see it. One look, and she'd be on his doorstep, demanding to know what he'd gotten himself mixed up in. There was no way a poor university student, one living on scholarships and grants, could afford a place like this. Tom himself had been suspicious of the rent at first, before he'd realized just who owned the building and what, exactly, was across the street from it. He'd been put up across from the dandy safe house. Though whether it was for his own protection, or so the vampires could keep him from causing trouble, Tom wasn't sure. Schechter wasn't exactly chatty, and Tom had gotten damn good at avoiding anyone with fangs. He didn't bother to lock the door as he left, but he did hesitate for a moment, wondering if he should leave some kind of note. He had no doubt that someone would be along to clean out the apartment, probably sooner rather than later, judging by the looks Schechter had given him last night. Should he thank the vampire for his hospitality? Dandies were very big on politeness and manners. If a little part of him was hoping that maybe, just maybe, some good could come from not burning all his bridges, Tom did his best not to think about it. He was booked onto a 5 a.m. train, along with 24 commuters. As Tom took a spot in line and dug around the front pocket of his bag for his ticket, he was happy to see that he was surrounded by middle-aged business types. Most were already working furiously on their Blackberries, flipping through copies of the Financial Times and comparing notes with business partners in other cities. No one took notice of the young man in faded baggy jeans, with hair that desperately needed a comb, and piercings that looked out of place given the company he was with. Tom supposed he was being ignored, not neat enough to fit in with their worldview. He didn't mind. The last thing he wanted to do was make conversation. The line started moving, and Tom adjusted the backpack on his shoulder, taking small, shuffling steps forward. He held his ticket out for the attendant to see, and proceeded to the platform. The train had assigned seating, so he made his way down the aisle and shoved his bag onto the overhead compartment. His seat was next to the window. The cool glass felt nice against his forehead when he curled up against it. As he closed his eyes, Tom was struck by how incredibly tired he was. It surprised him. With all the guilt, not to mention the horrible things he saw when he closed his eyes, he didn't think he'd ever sleep again. Before he knew it, he'd dozed off, pressed up against the window. The jerk of the train as it pulled out of the station startled him awake. Tom sat up, rolling his shoulders and turning his head from side to side to loosen up muscles that had already started to go stiff from the odd position. He reached both hands high above his head and arched his back, letting out a soft little sigh at the burn. He was leaning back in his seat, contemplating whether or not he should try the Sudoku puzzle in the seat pocket in front of him, when he caught sight of the shadow that fell across his legs. He slowly turned toward the aisle, expecting to see one of the businessmen from the station. He should have known he wouldn't be that lucky. A dandy sat in the aisle seat next to him, legs crossed politely, hands folded in his lap. Tom jumped, trying to press himself against the window in an effort to put distance between them. The vampire shook his head disdainfully, eyes narrowing as he took in Tom's appearance, especially the piercings in his nose and lip. Tom had to stop himself from reaching up and touching them, suddenly self-conscious. He'd had the nose ring for over a year, but the lip piercing was new. It still hurt now and then, but he didn't exactly mind. Anything to separate himself from the clean lines and elegance of the dandy gang. "You're oblivious," the vampire said. "How did you ever survive Beckett's city when you were all human?" Tom had nothing to say to that. He stared at the dandy beside him, taking in his blonde hair and blue eyes, his smart black suit, and recognizing him from the night before. Tom didn't know every dandy in the city, but he'd seen enough of them around to be sure that this vampire was new in town. He had such an intense gaze. It made Tom think he should be afraid of the things this vampire could see. "The sun will be up soon," Tom said, after the silence between them stretched on for a moment too long. He looked around uneasily, but the other commuters were spread out in the car, and no one would hear if he kept his voice low. "I'm only going as far as the next station," the vampire replied. "Though your concern is touching." His hand hovered over his heart, and he smiled a little, the expression mocking and hardly nice. "I would think you'd be eager to get rid of one of us." "I just want to be left alone," Tom said softly, rubbing his sweaty palms frantically on the thighs of his jeans. "Then maybe you should have thought of that before you gave yourself to a dandy," the vampire said harshly. "You can't undo that, Thomas." "You know me, but I don't know you. That's hardly polite," Tom said, trying to buy himself time, to delay whatever the vampire was there to do. "You can call me Briar if it makes any difference," the vampire said, with a small smile that told Tom he was being humored for the moment. It would not last. "Well, Briar, I can't be the only one," he insisted, returning to their conversation. "Of course not," Briar scoffed. "But the others didn't live long once they'd made their choice." "So it's that simple?" Tom demanded. "You go from wanting to keep someone forever to agreeing to kill them that quickly?" "Absolutely," Briar replied. "Do you have someone?" It was a stupid question for more than just the obvious reason. Not only was it impertinent, something a dandy would not stand for, it was irrelevant. Whether or not this vampire had someone at his side wouldn't help Tom any. He also ran the risk of bringing up bad memories, of angering the thing in the seat beside him. The thing. Sometimes it surprised Tom how different his thinking had become. "I wouldn't be stupid enough to let him get away," Briar replied. Tom blinked twice, a little surprised that the vampire had even bothered to answer. He knew he should keep his mouth shut, that his smart-ass comments would only get him in trouble like always, but he was unable to bite back his retort. "You have to sleep sometime," he pointed out. He couldn't bring himself to regret it, not even when the vampire's eyes grew dark. He was discussing a human being holding him against his will, and Tom couldn't just let that go. "Yes, I do need sleep," Briar agreed, his voice almost gleeful, as though he couldn't wait to continue. "But so does he. It's besides the point, though. I don't believe in keeping human pets. It's better to have a fledgling than a mortal. They're far less fragile, and aren't so fickle." "Fickle?" Tom asked in disbelief. That made it sound as though he'd objected to something stupid, like an ex's hair color or their laugh, instead of the slaughter of human beings. The insult stung more than Tom thought it would. Maybe he'd expected more of the man, and, by extension, his associates. "You broke your oath," Briar said. The dark look was back in his eyes, and the fury there made Tom's hands shake. He wedged them under his thighs.
You ran away, and now that your city has changed hands, you stand to bring a heap of trouble to this one.
While he'd known that running to Schechter's was the same thing as flipping off Mike and the others, the truth was that he hadn't thought he'd be allowed to stay. Because of that, he'd never really worried about what might happen down the road. He'd never even considered that leadership in the city might change. What exactly did that even mean? Was Beckett dead? Had he stepped down? Where did that leave Mike? Tom didn't know. He was confused, but it was clear that Briar was waiting for some sort of response. Tom returned to the only thing he could think of, not caring that he sounded like a broken record.
Schechter let me stay.
Surely he would have considered all the angles before making his decision. Tom could remember the way people spoke of him, in whispered tones, with reverence that tempered the fear. He wasn't the kind of man to make a rush decision. The vampire was exasperated and barely holding on to his anger.
Yes, but was it worth it?
He asked.
How will you repay him for all he's done?
Tom blinked. He didn't know how to answer that.
How should I?
He asked.
Keep your mouth shut,
Briar said, speaking slowly and emphasizing every word.
Brian Schechter's business is his own. His guests are his own. Do you understand?
Tom did, but he'd have to be an idiot not to. Mike probably knew where he'd been, but he didn't have to know the circumstances. As far as anyone was concerned, Tom had managed to get lost in the vast city, one of the lucky ones who could go a lifetime without crossing paths with a vampire.
Okay,
Tom said after a moment.
Good,
Briar replied. Tom watched him stand up, focusing on his every graceful movement, and did his best to bite back old memories, old feelings of desire. It seemed his body would take a while longer to get the hint. All of that beauty was bad, dangerous, evil. He kept telling himself that, over and over, and tried to ignore the sheer want that settled low in his belly. It was hardly his fault, he thought. His sense of self-preservation was hard at work, trying to make all of this easier, to make him wanted again. It seemed his ability to rationalize was still as strong as ever. Some wondered if he should be sickened by that, too. Briar stepped off the train, onto the platform, and shouldered past several commuters who were waiting to board. It was nearing 5:30. He could tell by the way the sky was growing lighter with every minute. He hurried, for once not caring about appearances or the scene he must be making. The station had entirely too many windows to be safe, but he moved with purpose, crossing the main terminal, heading for the underground parking garage and the long line of taxis he knew would be waiting there. He'd never make it back to the city center, to the safe house, but there were hotels nearby. They were hardly nice, not at all fitting for a dandy of his rank. But Briar could feel the warmth of the imminent sunrise, and knew he couldn't afford to be picky. This wasn't the first time he'd cut it so close, but at least he'd had a reason the other times. An official order to explain why he'd been caught so far from shelter. Briar slid into the back of the cab and asked for the closest hotel. He leaned back in the seat, affecting a calm demeanor, but he watched the sky with sharp eyes. The driver was smart, taking one look at Briar's clothing, another at the dashboard clock, and pulling quickly away from the curb. If he found himself in the sunlight, he'd have no one to blame but himself. His instructions had been clear, but despite the loyalty that came with strong blood ties and genuine affection, he'd known all along that he'd disobey them. Shadow the boy. Make sure he gets onto the train. It was simple. Briar looked up from his book, marked his place with the tattered red ribbon set into the binding, and slowly got to his feet. Schechter didn't make idle requests. Every move was thought out. Every potential circumstance weighed and measured. There was undoubtedly a reason behind it, but it was unlikely that Schechter would offer it. A leader didn't have to explain himself, merely give the orders.
Is there a specific threat? Briar asked carefully, knowing that it was the only question he could ask without sounding impertinent, as though he'd forgotten his place. He would not forget Cyrus and the scene that had followed that particular outburst. Everyone had walked on eggshells for weeks after her death. No, Schechter replied, a small disapproving frown tugging at his lips, as though he could follow Briar's thoughts and understand what he was really asking. But I won't be accused of hindering his return. Is that likely? Briar asked, setting his book carefully onto the nearly empty bookshelf against the wall. He'd brought only his favorite volumes, and the shelf looked rather sad. Perhaps not, but I'm not going to take the chance, Schechter said. Leadership has changed hands, and that means there's no reason for the border between our two cities to be as steadfast as it once was. I had good reason to keep William Beckett and his followers away. I have no such issues with John Walker. Thomas has obviously been summoned home. Someone is undoubtedly going to miss him before long, and I'd rather they not show up on my doorstep. Briar thought about it for a moment, going over what he knew of the mesmerist who'd been at Beckett's right hand. Competent, for sure, but with an unattractive ego. He just might be the sort to enjoy pushing the boundaries. He'd been orphaned young, given to Beckett to raise, and while most vampires might tread lightly given the situation, at least wait and see how the scene played out, Mike Carden was more likely to push his luck, especially if it would rebuild his tattered reputation. Sometimes it still amazed Briar how they could spend decades creating a reputation, only to have it ruined with one misstep. Granted, it had been a major one, and a stupid one at that. Trusting humans to keep to their word was naive. It was best to change them right away, before they saw anything that would change their minds. He's booked on a 5 a.m. train, seat 7A, Schechter said. At Briar's raised eyebrow, he cracked a smile. Thomas is more of a kept boy than he thinks, and that's fine. Sometimes the illusion of freedom is all a person needs. The words were familiar. Briar recognized them from long ago, and he was sure the parallel was deliberate. It so often was with someone like Brian Schechter. Tom has some role to play, Schechter continued, almost tentatively. The look on his face told Briar that he had his doubts about confiding so much, but there was obviously no way around it.
He would never say a word otherwise. His motives were his own. I've known it for years. Years. Plural. Tom hadn't been in the city that long. It didn't escape Briar's notice. Really? Schechter said, with a small smile. You don't think it's coincidence that a boy from such a poor family would have the means to get here, do you? To fund his dream education? An education that is better here than anywhere else? You would go to so much trouble? Briar asked. The thought was strangely disconcerting. I've always been a patron of the arts, Schechter said with a wicked smile. Follow him, he ordered. Make sure he gets on the train. We can't have him picked off by one of the hoods. I'll have to pass through their territory to get to the station. I'll have one of the cars put on standby, Briar said with a nod, moving toward the door to his apartment. We'll leave as soon as he does. There's more. The two simple words stopped the vampire in his tracks. He turned, taking in the serious expression on the older vampire's face. In that moment, Briar knew that things had progressed beyond simply babysitting a human boy, making sure he didn't bump his head or skin his knee on his trip across town. I need you to visit John Walker. Play the envoy. Be a good boy. Thomas is important, Robert. He... Schechter stopped abruptly, unwilling to continue with his train of thought. I need eyes in that house. Why not send Alex? Briar asked carefully. Alex will be so disappointed. Those words from earlier in the evening echoed in his head. Because he doesn't know, Schechter snapped. And he won't, not until he needs to. All right, Briar said, hands raised to chest level in a gesture of surrender. He shouldn't have asked, but if he needed to, he could make a case for looking out for a family member's best interest. Schechter was the one who'd brought up the connection in the first place, so it was hardly snooping. Perhaps for this very reason, the elder vampire shook his head tiredly. Just go, Robert, Schechter said with a sigh. Make sure he gets there. I've booked you a flight for tomorrow evening. I'll make sure that someone meets you at the airport. Hopefully Thomas will still be alive at that point. Would they really kill him? It was a stupid question. Were Briar the one affected by the human's desertion? He knew exactly what he'd do. In that city, he belongs to Cardin, Schechter said, using the mesmerist's name for the first time. He can do whatever he wants. The wording was off. Briar picked up on it right away. It begged questions best left unasked, dangerous questions about how many rules had been broken, and just how tangled Thomas Conrad had become with Schechter's family. Briar would keep an eye on the boy then. There was little he could do to keep him alive, but he supposed he was meant to cause enough of a distraction to give the others something bigger to deal with. I'll let you know when I've landed, he said. Good. And do let me know if they treat you well, Schechter called over his shoulder as he slipped out the door. Think of this as their probation period. I still haven't decided how much freedom they should have to come and go from this city. It was the first time Briar had ever heard someone propose treating another dandy as nothing more than a hood or a punk. Even after all the trouble they'd caused, the trouble they stood to cause in the future. He still found it unsettling. He would protect that at all costs, even if it meant letting the human take what was coming to him. Tom sat huddled against the window, watching as unfamiliar landscapes gave way to well-known landmarks. They were almost there, and every minute saw the sinking feeling in his stomach grow worse and worse. What would happen once he got off the train? His mind helpfully provided several scenarios, each one more horrible than the last. In the end, it was the uncertainty that got to him. "Are you all right?" Tom turned to the girl who'd taken the seat next to him at the last station. She'd had several large bags that should have been checked beforehand, and she struggled to fit them in the overhead compartment and the small space at her feet. Tom hadn't helped. It was one last act of rebellion against the manners that had been painstakingly drilled into him. "I'm fine," Tom said, not unfolding himself from his position against the window, but turning slightly to look over at her. She was young, maybe his age, with long brown hair and bright eyes. She had a bit of a frown on her face, but Tom could tell that she was one of those happy people, the ones who always had a smile and a hug for everyone they met. She was going to be eaten alive. "Are you sure?" she pressed, leaning toward him. "You're looking kind of pale." "I'm fine," Tom repeated, emphasizing each word, glaring a little. The girl settled back in her seat. Any other time, Tom might have felt guilty about treating her that way, but he'd heard her prattling on when she'd first gotten on the train, going on in depth about how she was starting college in the fall, how she was going down early to get settled first. She had a small bachelor apartment on the edge of town. Hood territory, Tom was sure of it. Maybe if he was mean enough, it would teach her not to talk to strangers. Maybe she'd live to see her first day of school. Tom ignored the girl, his eyes glued to the world outside as it rushed past his window. She didn't try to talk to him again. The train got in just after 3 p.m. Tom scanned the platform, searched the faces of the people standing there, and tried to see if there was anything particularly off about any of them. No one looked all that threatening, but some people were particularly good actors. The vampires couldn't go out in daylight, but every safe house had some sort of human staff to take care of the day-to-day concerns. Maybe along with cleaning and fielding callers, they specialized in kidnapping, too. "Sir?" The attendant's voice brought Tom's head away from the window. He looked around and saw that the train was empty, except for the two of them. How long had he sat there, lost in thought? Tom wasn't sure, and it scared him a little. He'd lost track of his surroundings once before, only to find himself in Hood territory. That night had changed everything, and he couldn't help but wish that he'd just paid attention, or maybe decided to buy his film from a corner store instead of that specialty shop on Robertson Avenue. "Sorry, I..." Tom stopped abruptly, unsure of what exactly he was about to say. He shook his head to clear it and got to his feet, reaching into the overhead compartment to retrieve his backpack. It wasn't all that heavy. He hadn't seen the point in bringing much more than a change of clothes and his journal. He'd taken the journal out more than once, but it had always found its way back in, and it left him feeling a little uneasy. There was a lot of himself in those pages. The thought of anyone else reading it?
And they would, he knew.
Made him want to curl in on himself. The attendant led him off the train, and Tom squinted up into the sun. It was a nice day. The sky was clear and the sun shone brightly down on him. It wasn't fair. His grandmother was dead and he was here to plan a funeral. By all rights, it should be raining, storming. There should be huge puddles everywhere, and he should be cold, bone-chillingly cold. Tom supposed it was a sign of how screwed up his life was, that the universe wouldn't even grant him that much. With every step, a little more of his sadness bled away, replaced with the kind of anger he'd never felt before. Not even when things had been really bad, and all his friends had pulled away from him. When he'd been so alone, so lonely and self-destructive. His grandmother was dead. The only person who'd ever given a shit about him was gone. Tom didn't care that he probably had no right to be angry. That if there was any justice in the world, he'd feel guilty for the rest of his life. He wrapped the anger around himself and used it as a shield to keep himself on his feet, to take one step after another. Mr. Conrad? It was the tone of it, the obvious question, that surprised him. Tom turned to see two men standing just behind him, dressed in neat, business-casual attire.
I wish they'd just make up their minds, the vampire said around a tired sigh. Dress up or dress down, there is no in-between.
Tom nearly looked around for Mike, but remembered at the last minute just how stupid that was. Not only was it broad daylight, but he was pretty sure that Mike Carden would have more pointed things to say when they were reunited.
Can I help you? Tom asked. Both cops. What else could they be? Were in their mid-30s. They weren't uniformed officers, which made Tom think that they were fairly new to the job, if they were detective grade. Wasn't that how it worked in the movies? You'd work the streets for a while before making detective? Tom wasn't entirely sure. Most of his knowledge came from old episodes of Law and Order. He'd never seen Briscoe in a uniform.
I'm Detective Wells. We spoke on the phone. This is Detective Collins. The younger of the two, a tall, slim man with blonde hair, said. He held his hand out to shake, and Tom hesitated for a moment before accepting it.
We're here as a courtesy, mostly.
Courtesy. Tom wondered if they were really that desperate for something to do. He couldn't imagine that a couple of detectives would have much work, given that the leading cause of crime in the city was vampire-related. Tom wondered if the majority of their days was spent playing cards or reading magazines. It certainly couldn't be spent doing actual police work, not when it was detrimental to the people who really ran the department.
Can't say I expected to see you here,
Tom said carefully.
It was the truth, of course.
He'd figured it would be some nameless, uniformed officer who picked him up. He wasn't sure how he felt about it being a somewhat familiar person. This man had broken the news to him, had listened as he went into denial. It hadn't been Tom's most dignified hour, but maybe that could be excused, given the circumstances.
Like I said, it's a courtesy, Detective Wells repeated.
We'd like to talk to you, Detective Collins cut in,
stopping Wells from continuing on in the sympathetic tone that left Tom feeling so unbalanced.
"Will you come down to the station with us, Mr. Conrad?"
So that's how it was going to go.
"Tom," Tom emphasized.
He gestured toward the doors that led into the train station. The unspoken "lead on" implied by his raised eyebrow. He followed, taking care to keep his steps even, not to fall behind. He wondered what ruse they'd use to keep him there until nightfall. Tom had ridden in his fair share of police cars, both before and after he'd found himself shoved aside by, all but abandoned by, his friends. It was never a particularly fun experience, but he found himself wishing things were as simple as they'd been back then, even when it felt as though his world was ending. What were a few misdemeanor charges, or even one serious felony, compared to what was currently waiting for him? "Sorry about making you ride in the back," Wells said, twisting in his seat to smile apologetically. Tom barely flicked his gaze away from the window, but he looked up just long enough to keep from seeing overly rude.
"Not the first time I've done it," Tom said. "At least this time my hands aren't cuffed behind my back. Hurts the shoulders like a motherfucker." "I'll take your word for it," Collins said stiffly from the driver's seat.
Tom thought about needling him, maybe pulling a surprised look and asking if Collins had seriously never spiced up his boring vanilla sex life with his own handcuffs. But in the end, he let it go. Not out of a grudging show of respect for the cop. He'd never respected the profession before, and he certainly wasn't about to now. But due to the sheer exhaustion that was settling into his bones. It was only so long a person could be terrified before it wiped him out completely. The rest of the short ride was spent in awkward silence. Tom waited patiently to be let out of the back of the car, and he dutifully followed the two detectives into the police station. They led him to a small office, Wells gesturing toward one of the thinly padded chairs in front of the nearest desk. This was obviously an office that both detectives shared. It was on the tip of Tom's tongue to ask who they'd pissed off to end up in such a shithole. Instead, he sunk down into the chair, his backpack balanced on his knees, and watched as the cop wheeled their chairs around the desk, closer to where he sat.
"We just want to brief you on the details," Wells said.
Collins sat quietly next to him, legs crossed and hands folded against his knee. There was a plain, boring wedding band on his left hand. It caught the light, and Tom found himself going into a trance, just staring at it.
"The details," he said, after he'd shaken himself out of it.
"The details," Wells repeated. "We don't have a lot to go on. I'm not even going to lie about that. But this is a horrible thing that happened, Tom, and it has the potential to be an important case."
"What?"
Tom asked, confused. His hands tightened around the straps of his backpack, his blunt nails digging into his palms.
"The press loves cases like this," Collins supplied. "Elderly woman killed in her own home."
Tom started looking around for somewhere to puke, the taste of bile strong in his mouth.
"Fuck, Stephen,"
Wells said, sounding scandalized and glaring at his partner.
"What he means, Tom, is that this is a sensitive case. It could turn into a circus if the press finds out about it. Everyone worries when an elderly woman is killed. In her own home, at that."
Tom could feel his eyes narrow, knew his jaw was set, and that the look on his face could definitely not be considered friendly.
Why are you saying this? He wanted to ask. Is this his idea of punishment? To make me think you actually care? So, details, he said. You wanted to share them? Go ahead. His voice was cold.
He leaned back in his chair and watched the two detectives, waiting impatiently.
Well, I suppose I should start with who found her, Wells began. A woman named Ruby Granger came over when your grandmother missed bridge club at the senior center. Apparently she'd never missed a game.
Tuesdays at noon, Tom murmured. The detective nodded, looking down at the small notebook he'd pulled from his pocket.
That's right, Wells said. The door was ajar, and when Mrs. Granger came inside, she found your grandmother on the floor in the entryway. Her neck was broken.
What? Tom asked sharply, leaning forward. He knocked his backpack off his lap and stared at the detective with wide eyes.
Collins was obviously gauging his reaction, but Tom paid him no attention. Cause of death, Wells repeated. Broken neck.
Tom slumped back in his chair, pressing one hand against his forehead.
A broken neck.
Not a vampire, then.
Could the world really be so fucked up that, of all the shit that could have happened, Tom should have worried about humans?
So you're going to find out who did it?
Tom asked, his voice slightly muffled by the heel of his hand as he rubbed tiredly at his face.
We're going to find out who did it, Wells echoed. Collins looked at his partner disapprovingly, and Tom figured they weren't supposed to actually make promises. He could understand why, but he had to admit that there was something like comfort in hearing the words.
Thank you, he said. He meant it.
Where will you be staying? Just so we can get a hold of you if we need to.
Wells had unclipped the pen that was attached to the front of his notebook, holding it just above a fresh blank page. Tom rattled off his grandmother's address and phone number. The detectives looked at each other for a moment, and Tom realized that he'd never even stopped to wonder whether or not he'd be allowed to stay there.
Didn't they cordon off crime scenes?
Okay, Collins said after a minute.
Do you want to ride back there?
No, Tom said, getting to his feet and retrieving his backpack from the floor. The last thing he wanted was to spend more time in the back of a squad car.
I have some stops to make, he continued.
It was a lie, but the walk would do him good, help him get his head on straight. He could start calling funeral homes on the way.